Well, good morning, church. It's good to have you join us for Church Online this morning. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Pastor Christian, and I'm the youth pastor here at West Winds Church. This morning, I get to start off our new sermon series that we're going to be going through over the next little bit, titled Finishing Well. Finishing Well. And the idea we're going to be looking at is the life of Saul in the book of Samuel, and kind of looking at the things that kind of got Saul to where he was, the things that made Saul go from a humble young man, God's appointed, anointed king, to a vindictive, jealous king. And this might be a spoiler alert for some of you, but Saul doesn't really finish well. He starts well, but doesn't really finish well. And when I think of the idea of finishing well, I'm always reminded of one of my professors from college named Mark Hawks. One of his favorite things he'd always say, he'd say it multiple times each class, he would say, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. It is not how you start, it is how you finish. And in that he means you can start well with your classes, you can do your assignments early, and you can do all that kind of stuff, but if you don't finish well, if you don't study for the final exam, if you don't put in effort in the final part of the course, your grades are going to plummet. And that's a great saying for life, too. It doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish. Because that's what people remember, and that's what you're remembered for. And so for Saul, he is most remembered for the end part of his life, how he finished, which wasn't very good. Again, spoiler alert. But before we get into today's scripture, I want to give a quick background on kind of what Israel was like in this time and who Saul was. And so Saul was the first king of all of Israel. And he was appointed the king to unite all the tribes of Israel into one true nation. And the goal behind this was pretty simple. The thought was, all separate, all the different tribes on their own weren't very strong, but bring them all together as one united true nation, and they become much, much stronger. And that was the plan. And so that's what they decided to do. And so in this time, they were united by so many things. They had the same history, the same language, the same religion, but their politics and how they ran things was completely different, and all their own person, all their own tribe, with no central authority. And so what they really wanted to do was create that central authority so that they could have someone who could defend them against threats. So they'd have maybe a standing army that they could have, that they could call upon if someone was to threaten them, or if they needed to take some land or anything like that, they'd have a standing army and they'd be much, much stronger together. Now, periodically, before this time, before Saul was king, there would arise problems or threats that would force them to come together. And in that time, they would appoint one person called a judge, usually a charismatic leader who would lead them and defend them moving forward against whatever threat that was. And so they would be in charge of the people, the supplies, the food, the army, military, all that kind of stuff they'd be in charge of during the period of the threat. But then once the threat was over, they would relinquish that power and everyone would go back to their own individual tribes. But because each tribe was for themselves, they didn't really have anyone to ask for help. So like if your tribe's being attacked or raided or what have you, like they didn't have a united front. So they couldn't just say, hey, could you come help this other tribe? Because they had their own problems they were worrying about. But Israel began to realize that they would never be a true strong nation without a king to lead them and unite them. And so it came to Samuel, who was the prophet of that time, to find God's appointed and anointed king and then anoint them as God's chosen leader. And so that's where Saul comes in, because Samuel chose Saul. And at this time, Saul was a young, handsome guy that looked like a king. Like he was tall, just looked the part of a king. Actually, in 1 Samuel chapter 9, when they see Saul in the crowd, it describes him as head and shoulders above everyone else. And that's actually where the saying, like your head and shoulders above the competition, came from looking at Saul in the crowd, being so tall and so big above everyone else. That's where the saying came from. And at first, Saul was reluctant. So Samuel says, hey, like Saul, like you're going to be the king. And Saul is like, I don't really know about that. He was reluctant, which I think is actually a pretty good sign, because anyone who's too eager to just have all that power probably isn't going to treat that power very well. And so someone who at first is reluctant probably understands the responsibility and the pressures that come with that authority and power. And so at first he's reluctant, but then eventually says yes, and he is anointed king, and Samuel chose him for a specific reason, because God was appointing him, but also because it was pretty strategic, because Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin, which is one of the smaller tribes, which meant that some of the bigger tribes wouldn't feel threatened by it. Because if you had picked someone from one of the bigger tribes, some of the other bigger tribes would feel like, hey, like, are you trying to like trick us into something? You're trying to take over our tribe and then have your tribe rule. And so by picking someone from a smaller tribe, it actually makes it so that they don't really feel threatened. They're like, oh, it's just Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. Like, they're a small tribe, so it's totally fine. And so Saul became king and was at first loved and was at first successful. And that's where we pick up in this story today. And that's where we're going to be picking up in 1 Samuel chapter 13, verses 5 to 14. It says this. And the Philistines mustered to fight with Israel 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and the troops like the sand on the seashore in a multitude. So a lot of people. They came up and encamped at Michmash, to the east of Bethaven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in trouble, for the people were hard pressed, the people hid themselves in caves and in holes and in rocks and in tombs and in cisterns. And some Hebrews crossed the fords of the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. Saul was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. He waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul said, "Bring the burnt offering here to me, and the peace offerings." He offered the burnt offering. As soon as he had finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and greet him. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash, I said, 'Now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord.' So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly, and you have not kept the command of the Lord your God, for which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." So to sum up, here is basically what happened. Saul's king, he's at this place, Gilgal, he's, you know, kind of ruling over the people. The Philistines are attacking him, and he's freaking out. And so Samuel had told him, "Hey, like, I'm gonna be back in 7 days, and then I'm gonna do our rituals and offering sacrifices to get the Lord's blessing on these battles, and then you're gonna go into battle." And Saul, no doubt, was worried, and so Saul instead says, "Forget it, it's been 7 days, I'm gonna do it." Samuel comes right after he finishes, sees him, tells him, "Hey, basically what you've done is you've ruined your line. You've ended your line to your children and their children to be king of Israel. You've lost it. God's going to find someone new." Now, I get where Saul's coming from. Like, 30,000 chariots, that is a huge, huge number. People were scared. People were hiding in caves and wherever they could find. They were really, really scared. This is a low point for the people of Israel. And Israel had wanted to have a king for so long, and they thought that having a king would solve all their problems. But now they're facing the same things. They thought they wouldn't have to, but now they're still facing them. And isn't that true for all of us? Isn't that, like, haven't you experienced that yourself? Where you think, if I just had this, if I just had this one thing, if I just had this job or this house or this relationship, then everything's going to be so good. And then we get it and realize, okay, I still have the same problems. Problems just don't go away. So Saul was at Gilgal, where he was initially crowned as king. And by this point, the people were following him, but they were scared. It says in the verse, they followed him, but they were trembling. They were really scared. And so Saul waits his 7 days. Samuel wasn't there yet. And he had already waited a long time. So you got to remember that it wasn't just like the Philistines showed up and Samuel said, "I'll be there in 7 days." Like, this had been boiling and stewing for a while. And Samuel says, "Hey, I'll be there in 7 days." But time had already passed. So people were already anxious. People were already scared. He had already waited many months in the face of this crisis. And I'm sure as each day passed, people were getting more and more anxious, and he was getting more and more pressed to do something. And he probably thought, hey, a quick response, That's the best because it gives the Philistines less time to plan and to attack. So if we respond quickly and we just go into battle, that probably favors us. But Samuel had told him to wait and then he would preside over the sacrifices and then Israel would be ready for battle. And I think we can all relate to Saul's anxiety here, can't we? I think we can all relate to what Saul would be going through. Like, he's already been waiting. People are freaking out. He's in charge. They face enormous numbers of people fighting. Like, he's terrified. Like, he's really worried. He just became king. He's still young. And now he has all this responsibility. He's thinking, well, I don't want to just sit and do nothing. Like, I want to do something. But I think we can all relate to that. Like, even if we know, like, if someone tells us, hey, like, I'm with you, I got your back, as time goes on, we can get more and more anxious. And something that we may have believed fully initially, we get more and more anxious about. If you've ever, when you were a kid and your parents were picking you up from somewhere, maybe it was school or a friend's house, and you're waiting for them, and if they're late, the first few minutes you're like, oh, it's no problem. I know they're going to pick me up. They said they'd be here. But if, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes goes by, especially when you're a kid, you're worried. You're like, did they forget about me? Did something bad happen? Like, what's going on here? And even though we know our parents are coming, they said they'd be coming, we get anxious. We get worried and we think, okay, what's going on? And then maybe if for me, when I was a bit older, I had a phone so I could call and say, hey, like, are you guys coming? Like, what's going on? Did you forget about me? But I think we can all relate to what Saul's going through here. He's anxious, he's worried, and he wants to do something. And so Saul makes a sacrifice for himself. And this might not seem, if you read this story, it might not seem like a big deal. It might seem like, okay, like, what's the problem here? Like, Saul waited his 7 days, 7 days happened, Samuel wasn't there yet within that time. Saul wants to do something, and so he says, well, then I'll do the sacrifice, like, I'll do it. And people might have thought that was awesome. People might have thought, oh man, this king, he's really taking things into his own hands. Like, he really wants the Lord's blessing. That's amazing. That's so great. And look at that. He doesn't want to just sit back and let us worry about it. Like, he's actually invested in helping us. And so it might not seem like a big deal, but it is a big deal for two reasons. First reason is that he blatantly disobeyed Samuel's command. He blatantly disobeyed Samuel, which in turn, Samuel spoke for God. So he was blatantly disobeying God. Samuel said, wait for me and I will do this. So the first reason why it's a big deal is because Saul blatantly disobeyed. He blatantly disobeyed. The second was that he was a king and not a priest. He was a king and not a priest. So he wasn't qualified. He wasn't the one chosen to preside over sacrifices. Only priests were to do that. Only people like Samuel were to do that. And history shows that combining civic and religious authority did not work out, and God did not want to allow Saul to do that. He could not be both the king and a priest. That's too much. He could not be the king and the priest. So then as soon as he does this, Saul is done and Samuel arrives. And isn't that always how it works? Isn't that like always how it goes down? Where if you're thinking about doing something that you know you probably shouldn't and you're wrestling with it and you're back and forth, and then finally maybe you give in and do it. And then as soon as it's done, the person shows up and you're like, oh no. Like, and you just can't believe that that's how it went down. Like, and you tell them, I was waiting for so long and all that kind of stuff, but it just doesn't matter. And so as soon as Saul's done, Samuel arrives. And Saul went out to greet him. And you may be thinking, like, Saul's probably going out there to greet him to be like, hey, I know you're going to be mad. Like, I know you can probably smell the sacrifices. I know you can probably smell the incense, all that kind of stuff. Don't be mad. But it's like, kind of like if you broke something or you did something that you shouldn't have at home and your parents are coming home, you want to meet them right away before they come inside so you can get a handle on the situation, right? Like, hey, don't be mad. Before you come in, this is what happened. Let me explain it to you so you know it's not my fault, but this is what happened. That's, you might be thinking that's what Saul's trying to do, is he's trying to get out in front of what happened. But what actually, if you look back at the translation and the literal what it meant, is that Saul didn't go out to explain what happened, but he was actually going out to try and bless Samuel. So not only did Saul say, like, hey, I'm going to do the sacrifice because no one else is here, he actually took it like he was a priest, and then when Samuel came, he went out to try to bless him again as if he was a priest. And so that's why Samuel is so upset. So he walks up, and then Saul comes out to try to bless him. And he's the one that's the prophet that God has chosen. So Samuel is really upset because Saul is really overstepping his bounds here. And then Samuel tells him this, and Saul tries to justify, like we all do, right? We all do this. Like if we do something that we know we shouldn't have, we always try to justify it or place the blame on someone else. So Saul says, look, like I waited the 7 days. You told me wait 7 days. I waited. You weren't here, so I had to do it. I had to. Like basically it's your fault because you're late. And we needed God's help now, and so I did it. We needed God to bless our fighters and our army, and so we had to do it now because we don't want to give the Philistines more time to prepare. And we all do this. And all this shows that Saul, how he responds, shows that he knew exactly what he was doing. Like, he knew exactly what he did was wrong. That's why he's justifying it. Like, if he had no idea, he'd just say, what, like, I shouldn't have done this, like, but you weren't here, so I just thought maybe I should, like, no, immediately he's justifying it. So this shows that he knew what he did was wrong. It's like if you do something wrong, maybe it's when you're an adult to your boss, or maybe it's when you're a kid to your parent or whatever, if you do something that you know is wrong and someone asks you about it, you're making excuses right off the bat to justify what you did because you knew you shouldn't have done it. If your boss says, hey, I don't want you to do this, and then one day you're doing it, the first thing you're going to say is, well, here's why, though. Here's why. And maybe they won't be mad. Maybe they will be mad. But when you're doing something you know you shouldn't have, the first thing you're going to do is try to justify it. Like if you caught your kid doing something, and they didn't know it was supposed to be a bad thing, and you walk in, and they're playing hockey in the house, and you're saying, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing that? And they say, oh, are we not supposed to? Like, I didn't know that. Like, they wouldn't try to hide it. They wouldn't make excuses. They'd say, like, yeah, we're playing hockey in the house. Is that wrong? Right? Like, if you're not aware that what you're doing is wrong, then you're not trying to justify your actions. So Saul knew what he was doing is wrong, and he did it anyway. So then Samuel says to him, hey, basically, I'm proclaiming God's judgment on you. So the whole point of having a king was to establish this like dynasty where each of the king's sons would rule in his stead, and it would create this long-lasting dynasty. That was the whole point of it. But now Samuel's saying, look, that's all done. You've been king for only a few years. That's over. Like, because of this, because of what you've done here in this moment, all that's done. Like, God's going to find a new king. God's going to find someone after his own heart. And that person and then his family down the line is going to be king. Like, your family is not going to be king. And so he loses all this. What was so big and so fresh still is now off the table. And Samuel says, look, that's off the table. You've lost it. Your sons, their sons, they're not going to be king. God's judgment is on you. And this is not going to last. He doesn't say that you're no longer king right now. He still like says, okay, you're going to be king, but for a time. You're going to be king, and it was going to be your family forever, but now it's for a time, and God's judgment is on him. And so what we can take away from this really quickly this morning, three things. What we can take away from this story is that we can't make excuses for things we know to be wrong. Like Saul knew what he was doing was wrong, and he immediately makes excuses. So if you're making excuses for things that you know that you shouldn't do, it's because you know you shouldn't do them. If you truly were unaware of what you were doing was wrong, then you'd say, oh, I didn't know. I mean, I guess that's technically an excuse, but you wouldn't try to hide it. So we can't make excuses for things we know to be wrong, and we want to do that all the time. That's our nature. Oh, I know we shouldn't do that, but here's what happened. I know that this technically is wrong, and God says to avoid this in the Bible, but the situation was that this happened, so now I can't do that. We all make those excuses, and we can't. Second thing is that God's timing usually doesn't line up with ours. So I get where Saul's at here. He's stressed out. He's anxious. He's worried. And he's thinking, okay, it's almost the end of the day. Where's Samuel? So he does it himself. But God's timing rarely lines up with our timing. And sometimes we have to wait past the point of comfortability. Sometimes we have to wait to the point where we're uncomfortable, where we're anxious, where we're worried, because God's timing is the right timing and it doesn't line up with ours. And lastly, we need accountability. We need accountability. The whole reason why Samuel is so upset here and why God's judgment is on Saul is because Saul was putting himself in a position where he'd have no accountability. If he was trying to be priest and king, then he answers to no one, because then he's speaking on behalf of God and the people. So he has no accountability. He answers to no one. No one can speak to him. And we need accountability. And so for us, we need to have people in our lives that can hold us accountable, because otherwise it's a recipe for disaster. This is a pretty interesting passage to me, because at first glance you can read it and think, and you totally understand. There's sometimes where you can read a passage and think to yourself, I don't know why this person would do that. But with this passage here, you can totally understand Saul's actions and thoughts. And initially, like I said, it might not even seem like a big deal of what he did. But when we really look at it, it's a much deeper picture. And so those three things I want us to remember this week. We can't make excuses for things we know that are wrong. God's timing usually doesn't line up with our timing. And we all need accountability. Let me pray. God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you so much that we can meet like this online and in person. God, thank you that your spirit and that your presence isn't limited to a space or a building or a room, but it can be everywhere all the time. We thank you for that, God. God, I pray that we be reminded this week of the importance of accountability, that for us who are anxious, who are worried about things in our life, that we would trust your timing. And finally, God, that we would be reminded that we can't just make excuses, but we have to follow and obey the commands that you leave for us. So God, we love you. Remind us of all those things this week. We ask this in your name. Amen. Thank you so much for joining us this week, church, and we will see you next week.